Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now our guest is Bill Federer, and we're going to talk about the IRS, and specifically something that LBJ did to the IRS code in the 1950s that still has impact today, something that actually Donald Trump promised to overturn, Lord willing. So welcome back to the program. Here is Bill Federer, who is a best-selling author and speaker. And his website is AmericanMinute.com. His latest, or not, this is not his latest book, but this is a tremendous book, and we're going to cover the content of this. It's called Endangered Speeches, How the ACLU, IRS, and LBJ Threaten Extinction of Free Speech. Bill Federer, welcome back to Vocal Point.
Jerry, thanks. It's good to be with you.
Sure. So why don't you give us a short version of the history of the IRS, and then how did LBJ change the IRS code in a way that is still with us today?
Well, it's important for people to realize that prior to 1913, there was no IRS. And so churches did not have to worry about losing an IRS tax exempt status because there was no IRS. So there was no income tax in America till the Civil War. How did the country get its money? Well, through tariff taxes on imports and excise taxes on specific things like salt, tea, tobacco. Lincoln pushed through a temporary revenue tax. It was repealed after the war. They tried pushing through an income tax in 1894. The Supreme Court declared it unconstitutional. But finally, Woodrow Wilson pushed through a 1% tax on the top 1% richest people, but left a category for churches. It was the 501c3 category, and churches were not taxed. And this goes back to the 1691 English statute that churches were not taxed. And as you bring out in many of your research, churches were the ones who invented hospitals. They had orphan care. They took care of the widows. They had all the wounded veterans. The churches took care of all the social needs. And also, they helped keep a moral populace, which kept the crime down. So you didn't have to hire as many policemen, and you kept orders aside. So churches served a very vital function.
And still do. And still do.
And still do. Mm-hmm. And so as a result, churches were not taxed, and this category 501c3 was for them. Well, the Rower Barons, the Rockefellers, Carnegies, J. Paul Gettys, these internationalists that were making railroads and oil companies, they didn't like being taxed with this new, brand new 1% tax of Woodrow Wilson's. So they jumped into the church category, and they formed 501c3 educational foundations. And then another ingredient was the communists took over Russia in 1917, Bolshevik Revolution. And then the communists began to send infiltrators into other countries. And they came to America, and they started 501c3 educational foundations, but their goal was to overthrow the country. And so in 1919, government decided to change the tax code for 501c3s to limit their participation in electioneering and pamphleteering. Well, one of the people defending the communists was Roger Baldwin. And he started the ACLU, which is a 501c3 organization.
By the way, the ACLU is a 501c3. The ACLU Foundation is 501c3. And I believe there's another branch of the ACLU that's not 501c3, if I'm not mistaken. And they'll kind of go back and forth between which organization will do which, you know, according to the law.
Right, and so his friend was Margaret Sanger. She started Planned Parenthood, which is a 501c3. And they do the same shell game where they'll get federal money, and then they'll say, well, we're not using this federal money for abortions, but it offsets expenses so that they can use other money for abortions. So, in effect, they actually are using federal money.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we began to see that 501c3s were getting involved and to overthrow the country, so Congress limited the tax code. Again, and then in 1934, a Revenue Act further limited 501c3s from influencing legislation by a substantial amount of lobbying, although they never defined what substantial was. Is it 5% or 50%? But nevertheless, in the 1950s, there were anti-communist educational foundations started, and these were conservative organizations. And legitimately, they were concerned because the communists had taken over the Soviet Union. Stalin and the Soviet purges killed an estimated 60 million people. Mao Zedong's Cultural Revolution in the 1950s in China resulted in 80 million deaths. And so we began to see that this was a legitimate threat. And so these educational 501c3s in America were warning the country on the dangers of communism. And they would even name names. And LBJ was one of the names that they named in their pamphlets. And they said that Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal program was concentrating power into the hands of the federal government, very similar to the communist concentrating power. And LBJ, of course, later started his Great Society Welfare State, which was an immense concentration of power in the hands of the federal government. And so the Facts Forum, F-A-C-T-S, Facts Forum, began to disseminate pamphlets, and it named LBJ as one of those in favor of concentrating power. And so LBJ did not like this. And so that's when he decided he would go into the federal Senate meeting and make a suggestion in where they were having the tax discussion that they limit 501c3s a little bit more. I want to read just a little bit from the pamphlet that lists, that names LBJ. It was printed in 1954 for Lyndon Johnson's reelection campaign. And it says this: a vote for Johnson, many Texans feel, will be a vote for more centralization of power and socialism in Washington, for more of the internationalism, which is designed to abolish the USA, and for more covering up of communist infiltration. Well, LBJ is running for reelection, and he doesn't like the Facts Forum putting out pamphlets associating him with communists, and so that's when he goes in to the IRS hearing, part of the U.S. Code, and suggests that the 501c3s not get involved in politics. And it passes on a voice vote because Republicans want to shut up the Rockefeller Foundation, Carnegie Foundation, Ford Foundation, because they're left-leaning and globalist. And the Democrats want to shut up this Facts Forum and some of the other Committee for Constitutional Governments because they're conservative-leaning. H.L. Hunt was one of the leaders of these of the Facts Forum. Actually, they were printing 60,000 monthly newsletters. They had 125,000 participants. They had Answers for Americans, a half-hour weekly program, on 22 TV stations and 360 radio stations. And then they had another program called State of the Nation on 315 stations. And then another program on half-hour on 222 stations. They were a very influential group impacting American politics. And LBJ obviously didn't like this. And so that's when he rushes through this voice vote. And so,
okay, and let me just stop you for a second. I mean, in fact, I'm going to quote from your own book. So that same day, July 2, 1954, LBJ proposed to silence those foundations by introducing in the Senate his amendment to remove the tax-exempt status of 501c3 foundations which intervened in political campaigns. Okay, now, here's the $64,000 question. How does this impact the churches, since it wasn't even the churches that LBJ was trying to shut down?
Right. So later, the biographer for LBJ acknowledged that he wasn't thinking about churches because his grandfather started was a Baptist minister who started Baylor University. He was just wanting to shut up these political groups. And but the IRS and the ACLU began to target churches and send them letters, and pastors had a hard enough time keeping up with their flock, much less keeping up with tax code. And so it discouraged pastors from speaking out, and they eventually, a generation went by, and now they assume they never did speak out. And so we're sort of in a re-education process. But it is interesting to note that W.A. Criswell, in 1960, in Dallas, Texas, he's pastor of the First Baptist Church in Dallas, and he has a very large radio program, and he gives a Sunday sermon on why John F. Kennedy, who was Catholic, should not be president of the United States. saying that his allegiances would be split, and if he was a faithful Catholic, he'd be underneath the Pope. Well, Kennedy goes down to Texas, meets with all the Baptist pastors. He gives a new twist on separation of church and state, and he says, the Pope won't tell me how to run America, and because there's a separation of church and state. Well, obviously, you and I know that the original purpose of separation of church and state was to keep the federal government out of state and church business. And he tweaks it, saying, no, this is the private views that I have won't affect my public policy. That was the beginning of the excuse that a lot of abortion people take today. Well, personally, I'm against it, but publicly, I'm for it.
Yeah.
And that all started with John F. Kennedy, his concept of splitting his own personal and private views. Prior to then, whatever you were in private is what you were in public. So here we got LBJ pushing through this amendment. It passes on a voice vote, and pastors begin to speak less and less about politics, and now they assume they never did. It is interesting during the civil rights era that Martin Luther King Jr., one of his criticisms against the white church was they weren't speaking out about the injustices of racism. And he says, you're more interested in following your tax code and all of your rules rather than standing against injustice. And so he even acknowledged that it was this crutch for pastors to say, well, I'm not going to speak out because of this tax code thing. No, you're supposed to speak out. One of the other books I bring out the point, the title of the book is Who is the King in America? I point out the most common form of government in world history is a king. And as the centuries go on, they get bigger and bigger and bigger. Pharaoh, Caesar, Kaiser, Sultan, until finally the King of England had the biggest. And when America's founders got the chance, they wanted to set up a government as far away from a king as possible. They flipped it and made the people the king. So a republic is the people are king ruling through representatives. And so pledge allegiance to the flag and to the republic for which it stands. You're pledging allegiance to you being in charge under God. And the interesting thing is 70% of Americans identify themselves as Christian, according to the Pew Forum, P-E-W, Pew Forum, and 70% Christian, which means they go to church at least every now and then, which makes the pastors in America, in a sense, the counselors to the king. So collectively, the pastors in America have the 70% of the Americans in their pews, and so the pastors have a responsibility to tell them that they are accountable to God for what happens in the country.
You know what? Let me give a quick analogy here, or not analogy, but an observation. The late Dr. D. James Kennedy, the ultimate founder of this radio station and radio ministry, said the point that historically, using this specific example of abortion, historically the church always addressed the issue of abortion and always sought to provide loving alternatives to abortion. In the 1960s and especially the 1970s with the Supreme Court decision, the issue became politicized. So now all of a sudden, if you speak out against abortion, you're endeavoring into politics. Well, that's nonsense, because it's still the moral obligation of the church to speak out on the social issues. Like what you were saying earlier about Dr. King's quote that the church is the conscience of the nation. Now, we have about 1 minute left to go. I understand that Donald Trump has promised to actually undo, if possible, this Johnson Amendment from 1954 that has limited what can come out from the pulpit as far as politics.
Right. Now, pastors can do a lot. I mentioned that 1934 Revenue Act. They can speak out when it comes to lobbying legislation. They can personally endorse candidates. They just can't use church money to endorse candidates. There's a lot pastors can do. Liberty Counsel and Alliance Defending Freedom will give you the outlines for this. But because of the ambiguity, pastors have decided, a large percentage of them, just to sort of back off of these issues.
Okay, we have 30 seconds left. Please get to Trump, if you would. Thanks so much, Bill.
So Trump's removing of this will take away that excuse from pastors and will allow the participation in the process of running the country the way that it's been from the beginning.
Excellent. And people can get more information at your wonderful book called Endangered Speeches, and then also your new book, Who is the King in America? AmericanMinute.com for more information. Bill Federer, Always a pleasure. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Jerry.
Okay, bye-bye now. God bless.